gentlemen, please take your seats. The spotlight is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. I'm Mystery Matt, and you're listening to the Mystery Matt Spotlight Podcast. This evening, we've got a fun one for you. You've probably heard it before. You'll probably hear it again. This evening, we are speaking on the matter of Roswell, New Mexico. And I am joined by Greg and Colleen.
Yo.
Hello.
Everybody loves your hair, Greg. I don't know what's going on.
I know, I changed it up a little bit. I'm a blonde now. Blondes have a lot more fun, you know.
Feel free to move that around, because it's got to move so that it can get both of you. Yeah, make sure we're getting solid. See, that's another thing that thing can do. I can take the HDMI from here, run it to the other thing, and you guys can see the waves on your side.
Right. Yeah. That's...
It's kind of like a teleprompter. Oh, we could even do that. We could make it like scroll up with like an ad read or something. You want to do an ad read for like Star Trek, Colleen?
Ooh, an ad read for Star Trek. What would that be?
Be like, they've boldly gone before, and they'll boldly go again. You know, things like that. You know,
That's a good one. Actually, that's really good. And
that was off the top of my head.
Your voice on that one. Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
I love movie announcer guy. He was a boy, she was a girl, and they fell in love. You know, it's all in the, intonation or whatever?
In the intonation. He was a boy, she was a girl. What did they do? I don't know. Okay, I suck at it. We'll just accept that. There we go.
This summer's biggest blockbuster. Roswell, New Mexico.
I could see him actually doing that. Like, he'd be very good at that, wouldn't he?
Talking in a deep voice.
1946, Roswell, New Mexico. That's was it good. 1946?
47.
47, I was off by a year. Not bad, though. So who wants to tell the story or start the story?
All right, I'll go first with this story here. Once upon a time,
he was a boy, she was a girl.
All right, so let's dive in here. All right, in the summer of 1947, the world was still recovering from the effects of World War II, and it was looking at a future with the Cold War looming. So on June 24th, 1947, Kenneth Arnold reported seeing 9 shiny, unidentified flying objects near Mount Rainier in Washington. He estimated they were going at speeds of around 1,200 miles an hour, which was unheard of at the time.
I almost have to take my socks off to count that high.
I'd have to take off my socks and my gloves, and I've got nothing. Anyway, this was believed to actually be the first post-World War II sighting, and it was the start of modern-day UFO phenomena. It was covered nationwide and worldwide, and some reports say that it spawned as many as 800 sightings soon after it. So that's just kind of sets up as to this is what was happening in the world at the time that Roswell happened.
Yep.
So.
Very Fallout-esque.
I guess so. Yeah, and it really was. It was the start of the modern-day UFO craze. It just blossomed like mad. There were a huge bunch of reports in around this late spring, early summer of 47, and they just went from there. Now, what was interesting on that, so Mac Brazel was a foreman at Foster Ranch in Lincoln County, New Mexico. This is about 75 miles north of Roswell, New Mexico. He had no telephone or radio, so he was actually unaware of the nationwide UFO craze until July 5th, when he went to visit an uncle and heard about it. Now, can you imagine? No telephone, no radio in 47. Like, wow.
I could, but knowing what we have now, I wouldn't want to.
To us, that's unthinkable. But back then, I guess it was, especially out in the rural areas,
like
that was something that happened.
Especially not to have a radio.
Yeah, I get the no telephone, but no radio? So yeah, he had no idea what was going on with the UFO craze. So that did not influence him at all. So the story is that on June 14th, 47, Mac and his son were inspecting the land when they spotted something odd. They saw a scattering of metallic objects. Brazel described it as a large black area of bright wreckage made up of rubber strips, tinfoil, tough paper, and sticks. He said it would, it was thick enough that the sheep wouldn't even cross it, and there was a gouge in the land about 500 feet long and 10 feet wide. That's a huge gouge. But it looked like something had skidded along. This was a wreckage that covered a very large area.
Am I the only one that's picturing the saucer section of the Enterprise D going through the landscape?
Actually, the funny thing was, is when I was reading this, that was what went through my mind. I pictured the saucer section careening down onto the landscape, plowing through a farmer's field. And then I pictured sheep going flying in its wake.
And it just gets funnier from there.
I know, yeah. I know.
You broke my tractor.
They only talk about sheep, so I guess maybe that was what was on the ranch, is sheep. Yeah. He could not understand where the objects had come from. So while he was suspicious, he actually left the area with his son. So he just left it. This was on June 14th. But he couldn't forget about it. So on July 4th, 47, he returned. So that would have been about 2 weeks later that he returned to the crash site. He found the wreckage was just as he had left it. He now decided that he should report it to the authorities for further investigation. This idea was cemented even more when he saw his uncle the next day and heard about the UFO information. So he was like, okay, I better, you know what, I better go and talk to the authorities.
The authorities.
So 3 days later, he returned with an empty truck and he gathered as much of the wreckage as he could. And he headed straight for the sheriff's office. The sheriff was George Wilcox, who had had many years of experience and had seen a lot of things in his years. He'd worked during war years. He'd seen it all, done it all. But despite this, he had no idea what he was looking at when he saw this wreckage that was brought in. So what he did is Sheriff Wilcox called the Roswell Army Airfield, so the RAAF, which is now known as Walker Air Force Base. The Roswell Army Airfield was actually very big. It housed the 509 Composite Bombing Group.
Oh.
This was a highly regarded and trained bomber group who was responsible for all the atomic bombs.
Oh.
It was the only atomic strike force in the world. They were the group that took care of the bombs in Japan. They ferried everything around. They did Bikini Atoll.
I don't know if I say take care of, but...
Yeah, I didn't know what word to use.
Yeah. Tricky
right.
one.
So that tells you, like, this was not just a fly-by-night Air Force base. This was a very high-end, very highly regarded Air Force base. And the bomber group was extremely highly trained. They had a lot of knowledge. They had a lot of intelligence officers there. They were doing a lot. So the fact that it went to them and how they responded, they knew a lot. And when they said something happened, people listened. So Sheriff Wilcox also called his close friend, Colonel William Hugh Blanchard, who was the commanding officer of the Roswell base, and talked to him. So what they did is the objects that had been gathered by Brazil, the rancher, were then escorted from the sheriff's office to the Air Force base and to Blanchard. Blanchard was just as confused by the items as the sheriff was. So soon what he did is he contacted General Roger Ramey, and he was the senior commander of the 8th Air Force in Fort Worth, Texas. He was asked to review the wreckage and advise on the next steps. At this point, the RAAF, so the Roswell Air Force Base, sent men to retrieve what they could from the original debris field. Two of these men were Major Jesse Marcel and Captain Sheridan Cavett. They were assigned to return to the ranch and gather the material. Things now get actually pretty complicated at this point, because there's actually two stories regarding the Roswell crash. There's the rancher's story, and then there is the other story.
I want to hear the bullshit U.S. Army story.
Well, the bullshit U.S. Army story is in a little bit.
Oh.
What's actually often spoken of with Roswell is that there were two crash sites. One was found by the rancher and one that was found by the military.
Oh.
So during the first few days of July 47, radar was tracking an object near Roswell. It eventually lost track of it, but these radar trackings were important, as this was an area of great interest due to the presence of the 509 Bomber Squad and due to the nuclear testing that had been done in the area before.
Like retaliation kind of thing?
Well, the thought is if extraterrestrial intelligence were to come here, that was actually a good area for them. If they were curious about nuclear testing, if they were curious about what the nuclear bombs were, this was the area. This was where the Bomber Squad was. This is where testing had happened. So they were tracking for about 3 days an object in the skies. And then on July 4th, the object disappears. And they expected that it had gone down. By the next morning, by the morning of July 5th, an archaeological team had been dispatched. When the archaeology team got out to the desert, they also found a couple. Now, the couple had been in the desert doing the things that couples do when alone. And a little bit more complex because the woman was married, but the man was not.
Oh, no.
So.
That's bad.
They had been in the desert that on the night of July 4th when they saw an object zoom overhead and slam into the ground near them. At the time, they were just a bit too drunk to do anything, so they decided to come back the next morning.
Been there.
And that was when they met up with the archaeological team. So on the morning of July 5th, trucks entered the area and the military blocked it off. This is likely because this site was closer to Roswell, so they needed to keep the people out of the area. Whereas their site found by the rancher was 75 miles out of Roswell. It wasn't going to get accidentally stumbled upon. It's at this second location that firefighters were believed to have been present, as there were many stories from firefighters in the area. It's also from here that there's a belief that the bodies and debris were removed and taken to Hangar 84 at the Roswell airfield. So at this point on July 5th, the Army went in and removed the bodies. If there were bodies, it removed the debris. It told the firefighters, get out of here. You never saw anything.
Yeah.
It took everything up, took it away, and it sat back and went, phew, we've got that covered. No one knows. We're all good. And then...
Oopsie doodle.
And then within a couple days, the rancher shows up at the sheriff's office with more debris. And they realize we got a problem. So on July 8th, so this is now after the Army has sent out the men to the rancher's field to collect the remaining debris. So on July 8th, 47, a press release was made by the RAAF that a flying disc had been removed from a local ranch. The story was immediately picked up by the Roswell Daily Record, which was a local newspaper. The story was printed with the headline, RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. The official press release from the military read, the many rumors regarding the flying disc became a reality yesterday when the intelligence office of the 509th Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force Roswell Army Airfield was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers and the sheriff's office of Claves County.
Wow. Say that 10 times fast.
Oh, I would rather not. Thank you.
you're like, screw off. I barely got through it the once.
So, but this did not last long. Almost immediately, the story was recanted and changed. The military announced that the wreckage was actually that of a weather balloon carrying a radar target. The device would look somewhat like a box kite made of foiled paper attached to wooden sticks. So on the morning of July 9th, less than 24 hours after the first reports, the papers printed a story titled, Army Debunks Roswell Flying Disc as World Simmers with Excitement. They really liked the good headlines, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mac Brazel.
Stay tuned, folks.
So the rancher, Mac Brazel, maintained that what he had seen was not a weather balloon. The newspapers also highlighted that no metal or engine parts had been found in the wreckage. The military released pictures of Major Jesse Marcel posing with wreckage that was said to be the weather balloon. There was also a press conference held by General Ramey, remember the leader of the 8th Air Force or something in Fort Worth, where weather officer Irving Newton identified the material as pieces of a weather balloon. From that point on, in the media's interest dwindled greatly. They basically, the media was like, oh, okay, we're done. We're good. Walk away.
Yeah.
Major Marcel.
Case closed.
Like Major Marcel has since claimed that the pictures and the weather balloon story was a hoax and a cover up. The military later said that it was an attempt to deflect attention away from a top secret project. And from here, the story faded from the public view until 1980, when a book titled Roswell Incident was published by Berlitz and Moore.
Yeah.
But it's from what I found on it, there were two crash sites about 40 miles apart from each other. One of them is said to have had the actual body of the aircraft and bodies. The other was just the debris field, and that was what was found in the rancher's yard. Now, the big question is what happened that there would be a debris field so far away with no real huge pieces, and then the main body ended up 40 miles away from that.
A midair explosion.
But then when you look trajectory. At it, what I kept coming across is if the rancher's dates were correct, he found that debris 2 weeks before the crash that
they
apparently
found?
Had the body. So was this, what was this? Was this second, two yeah, ships? Yeah. Who knows? So I don't know on that one, but that was the Roswell incident.
Which one do you think it was? Do you think it was two, or do you think it was a bigger one that broke in half? And
I actually, my first thought was it was a bigger one that broke in half. But then when I realized the dates were off, I thought, wait a minute, what if it's two? What if it was one crash came, or one craft came, maybe even a probe came, and it crashed, and then another ship came to retrieve it, and it crashed.
Mm. Yeah. Or was shot down.
Right. They're interesting. There's been a lot of talk over the years about what was found in the debris and stories about that. There's a lot of stories out of people from Roswell. Many times it's the children or the grandchildren now, the people who were involved, what they found.
Yeah, I saw one documentary, and it was one of the ranchers before they had him take his picture with the balloon.
That was Marcel. That was Major Marcel. Yeah. Major Jesse Marcel.
And he apparently came home and showed his son the debris, the real debris, before the entire story was reversed and flipped on its head, and they were both told to shut up.
Yes. So Jesse Marcel Jr. claimed that when he was 10 years old, his father woke him up one night to look at the debris that he'd found at Roswell, saying that he would never see anything like it again. His father maintained the items were not of this earth, and they looked through them, trying to make sense of what this was. He was most fascinated by a small metal I-beam with purple-hued hieroglyphics on it. And when I say small, it really wasn't that long. It was maybe only like the length of like a yardstick and about the size of a yardstick.
They said it was shorter than a meter?
Yeah, it wasn't that long, this little piece that he's talking about, because they made a replica of it. And it isn't that big.
Yeah.
But there were like purple-hued hieroglyphs, is what he said. The Major Marcel himself claimed that the metal that recovered from the site was very unique. And there was often a lot of talk about this tinfoil-like material that they recovered, where you could hold it in your hand, crumple it up, and you couldn't even feel its weight. Then when you let it go, it would just completely open right up and be flat and undamaged.
Self-healing.
Yeah, almost, yeah.
Like a self-healing or a material that has memory of some sort.
Yeah, and you could crumple it, do whatever, but they couldn't cut it. They couldn't light it on fire. They couldn't destroy it.
But yeah, they have a chunk of it, so something went through it.
Well, that was another thing. How much force had to be involved in this crash for it to have actually destroyed this material and ripped it? But there's numerous eyewitness accounts of this very odd tinfoil-like material. There were lots of things that went on it.
Okay, so I do get into it more in the next podcast. I know that because I already said it. But do you think it's a government technology that the states have reverse engineered? Or do you think this specific one is actually extraterrestrial? Or do you think it's all hooey?
The Roswell incident occurred at a time before mass media and internet age and that, and it still stayed in our conscience. It was one of the first major incidents that were reported. And my thought is that I think whatever they found there, I think it was likely extraterrestrial in origin, and that then the government used what they found and reverse engineered it to maybe even give us what we've got. If you look at how progressive we've gotten so fast in the 75 years since Roswell, 80 years since Roswell, that's an unbelievable fast. Like, what did they find there that they could use?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got some more information on that, but I'm not too sure what Greg has, so I don't want to get into too much. I'll let him go.
Your turn, Greg. Your turn.
My turn. Okay.
Hi, Greg.
How
you been?
So,
fine.
Basically, I've been good.
Okay, you know, good. Yeah, all right.
You know, this blonde is helping me, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Self-confidence boost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to get rid of the gray hair, you know?
Well, I'm looking forward to becoming Matt the White. So, because I'm going straight. We all know it. I'm going straight to white. I've already had, you know, the hair show up all right. over the place. So, yeah. Yeah. Like, especially like, you know, right. You get these ones, they're white. Anyways, yeah, it's like a superpower to me, though.
So, what I'm going to talk about is what Roswell is currently like right now.
I want to know.
Yeah. Well, it's big on tourism because,
you don't say.
Yeah, you know, because of all those little green men, you know, that crashed. A long time ago, like, a lot of people are interested in that kind of stuff.
Route 66 got a bump after the movie Cars, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah. So, of course, there's a lot of different theme restaurants there. There's a lot of theme hotels. You can sleep with an alien if you want. I mean...
That would be weird.
You know, get a little kinky, I guess.
Like, are we talking tentacle or...
Whatever you like.
Oh, no. That's a big book.
And then, you know, there's also a festival there as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like Mardi Gras?
Yeah. It's a UFO festival.
Oh, neat.
That makes sense.
It happens every year. It started in 1995, and it's a big festival. Lots of people go there.
Only
they wear
95.
Their tin hats, foil hats, and everything. And, you know, they go there and have a great time, you know?
I would
talk
go,
alien.
Do you know how many, like, souvenirs I would come back with?
Oh, I bet you would
have to. Yeah. You know, like, get the rubber one, you get the inflatable one, you get the one for the kid, you know, plushie or whatever, right? Yeah. Then you buy his whole playset and the vehicles and stuff, right? Get the whole alien set. Colleen's just staring off into space. She's
She's thinking of something. She wants to say something.
I was thinking, so it started in 95. It's interesting because the U.S. military came out in 94 and 97 with furthering buckling down on their claims that it was a balloon. And I wonder if when the U.S. military came out in 94 talking about that it was balloons, there was a big people were saying, no, you got to tell us the truth. And then the festival starts the year later. That's where my mind was just going. I think that's interesting.
Maybe it was to push the matter.
Well, it's like they were almost standpoint. Like the people were reacting in terms of, no, we don't care what the government says. We know what happens here. Anyway, I just found that one interesting.
To be honest, though, I'm surprised the festival didn't start earlier because, you know, because the crash was in 47.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm surprised it took so long.
Yeah, because, you know, you have all these other festivals.
Where were you, like, 80s? Come on.
The part of that, what I found was that up until 1980, when this book was published, Roswell had actually mostly been forgotten about, except for by fringe groups here and there. So background groups where you'd get a pamphlet, but there wasn't internet or anything. So it was mostly forgotten about because they were deep in the Cold War. They wanted to trust the government. They didn't want to believe the government was going to lie to them. So they went off of, well, the government said it was a weather balloon. So it's a weather balloon. It was forgotten for so long. And then it took, after the book was published in 80, it took a while for news to start getting around and around. And I really think the introduction of the X-Files in the early 90s really helped spur it. And I don't know.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, if it hadn't been done by then, the X-Files would have pushed for a festival by then. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, like,
Stargate was out, things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, like, when you get into Roswell and everything, like, it basically started like all Hollywood stuff too, right? Like the X-Files and
all the old movies.
Yeah,
you know.
The Encounters. What was it? Some kind of Encounter movies or
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah,
late '70s.
Yeah, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And then you have like
The Earth Stood Still. You know, there's millions and millions of UFO movies, right?
Independence Day was another big one.
Oh, that was a huge one in the 90s.
Yeah, that was basically based off of Roswell, basically. That
that was inspired from.
And look at Will Smith now.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, everything was huge, you know, like, Hollywood went nuts with it, right? I mean, like, that's what they did, right? And, of course...
Well, E.T.
Yeah, E.T. as well. Yeah.
Alien itself, Predator.
Yeah, yeah, there's a whole
bunch of stuff. Star Trek was huge. Star Wars is now big.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. something.
Yeah.
It's either big or it's broken, one of the two. You decide at home.
Yeah. But, choose I mean...
your own adventure podcast.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, there was a lot of different things, and I think this is just my personal opinion. With the recent government, like, releasing a lot of UFO, like, documents that were classified and everything, I think eventually this will get released. Like, we'll hear it. Like, eventually we'll find out what really happened, like, because I think it's all a cover-up. That's my opinion right now, but, I mean, like, I believe, like, in the future, we'll find out what really did happen there, and they will release whatever they have, basically, because the government will be like, okay, here it is. We don't really care anymore. This is what happened, and there, here you go, you know? And whatever it is, it is. I mean, if it's alien cover-up or if it's something totally different, I mean, we'll find out, I think. Yeah. So
we do get into it next week about credibility. But how credible do you think everybody who has come forward and said, yeah, I think it is the aliens? Like, do you think they're, like, top-notch guys? Or, like, I get the military ones that first came forward, yeah, but what do you think about otherwise?
There's been a few people that, with this Roswell, there's been a lot of hoaxes as well, right? That they made up as well. So,
a lot of hoaxes since.
Yeah. Yeah, since then.
Yeah, which kind of muddies the waters, as they say.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, it's hard to say because there wasn't very many people that were credible. I mean, there were some people that were credible, but then there wasn't, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I know, like, when I was looking in, one thing, I started to watch a documentary, and about 3 minutes into it, they showed clips from that famous alien autopsy hoax. At that moment, I turned the documentary off, because it's like, if this documentary is using clips from that to verify their point, I'm not watching it.
I'm not even sure if that one is a hoax.
Well, I mean, that one, there's been numerous
people
who came forward.
Did you see Interview with an Alien?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
I
don't expect to sleep for a bit.
I could see that if it wasn't a hoax, that the government would do anything to make you think it would. So it could very well be just falsely claimed a hoax. A lot of the people who've come forward to talk about Roswell are actually the children of those who were involved, who remember stories.
Okay, so that's a funny thing about next week. Even though we're doing this backwards. I hate doing them backwards out of order. But next week, Sarah talks about how she was watching documentaries, and anytime she came across a child's encounter, she would fast forward them, not because she didn't believe them, but she couldn't stand looking at them. So I'm like, to me, I would be listening to the children more because they have the innocence of a babe. What do they have to get out of this? It's not like dad's going to give me an extra $5 because, you know, we found a spaceship, you know. So well, I would find children more credible.
With Roswell, there's a few that have come forward. One who was Jesse Marcel Jr., who was the son of Major Jesse Marcel, who was one of the main men on the ground collecting debris. And of course, he claims to have been able to, he saw it, he held it in his hand before his father took it away.
The only problem I have with that guy is that he's the son of... He could be clout chasing now, knowing how big UFOism has become.
So,
you know what I mean? If it was the guy himself on his deathbed doing a recording, whether or not it's video or just audio of him saying, you know, no, this actually happened back then. They made me lie. This is my confession on my deathbed, so on and so forth. When the son just comes out of nowhere and he's like, yeah, I know I've been quiet for so long. It's like, yeah, because you were still growing up, for one, and you probably were starting your life. But then you realize life is getting hard and you start saying, okay, well, maybe I should get some of this UFO money. So you're like, oh, yeah, my dad was, you know, whatever, right?
But what we said earlier, though, I mean, like, it didn't really get back into like popular. Like a lot of people forgot about it until like the 70s, right? And
yeah.
When that book brought it back and everything. So maybe he just was quiet because no one else was really wanting to speak about it, you know?
Mm, could be.
Yeah.
So in 1980, when Berlitz and Moore started working on the book Roswell Incident, and they started working in the mid-70s, they had to really work at tracking down people, and then they had to go after them for months, even years, to get them to talk. Part of what happened at Roswell was what all the witnesses report was that they were threatened, and they were all threatened with something that pertained most to them. So those witnesses that worked for the military were threatened with jail or threatened with getting discharged, not getting any benefits.
Did any of them report men in black?
Yes, that was a very common report. In fact, some of the earliest reports of men in black came from
Roswell. We haven't done
a
men in black one yet, have
we?
No,
we haven't.
Okay, so that's on the list.
But another Will Smith, huh?
See, the reason why we don't do pop culture so much anymore is because they usually end up being niche.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas mystery, you're either into the mysterious, paranormal, aliens, or true crime, one of the three kind of thing, like conspiracy, otherwise kind of thing. And that's why you're here, right? That's more broad than just like the life and times of Tina Turner. You know, there are people that would listen to that, but they're not as abundant as the mystery and true crime crowd.
So what many of the witnesses reported was that they were soon visited within days of the incident, just even while the first newspaper reports were coming out on the 8th, they were getting visited. And so the military ones were threatened with jail or with deportment or all sorts of things. But the civilian ones were threatened with death. If you ever talk about this, we'll kill you. We'll kill your family. The sheriff's family.
We'll eat your dog.
Yeah, the sheriff's family reported that he was threatened with that his wife and his daughters would be killed. There was a fireman who was he was on the scene of the second crash site. So the one that the military thought they had managed to cover up, the one that was like on the fourth, fifth. And his daughter, Frankie Rao, she's come out with claims that her father came home and told them of the crash the night of the crash. He described that there were actually three aliens, three bodies at the crash. Two were dead and one was alive. He said the remaining being was very sad and upset. And her father apparently was most upset about the fact that he couldn't help that last person. He felt so bad for them that they'd traveled all this distance and here they were, they'd lost their crewmates, they were all alone and he couldn't comfort them. And he was very upset about that. He said that the military arrived and made the firemen leave and threatened them that if they ever spoke of it, they would be goners. She remembers that about 2 days later, she was actually at the firehouse when a police trooper came in to show the firemen and whoever was there this really cool thing he had found while collecting debris. And at that point, anybody who had managed to keep a piece of the debris was being hunted down and the object was being taken from them. But he showed them, he pulled out from his pocket this little thing crumpled in his hand and he took it out, dropped it on the table, and it just spread out like a pool of water, this piece of metal. So everybody in the firehouse apparently got to touch it, play with it. They took out knives. They took out fire.
That's that self-healing crap.
Yeah, again. They took out knives. They took out lighters, trying to destroy it. Nothing worked. And she even herself played with it for about 5 minutes. And she would crumple it in her hand and it would unfold again. She'd do it again. And when she'd crumple it, it would feel like there was nothing there. Like she was holding nothing but air in her hand. And it would unfold into this big piece of metal. What happened was within a day or so after that, military men showed up at her house and took her aside. And she's this little 12-year-old girl. And they were threatening her like, you never saw it. And she's like, well, yeah, I did. Like, she was taught not to lie. And they were like, you've never saw it. They threatened her. They threatened her mother. You never talk about this again. And she said, to the day that her parents died, it was never brought up again. And when she was first contacted by the book writers, she wouldn't talk to them. It took quite a while before she talked to them. It was same with a number of the other people. They would not speak. It took a lot of cajoling, a lot of perseverance from the writers to get them to speak. And I guess they probably figured that this book would just get forgotten about. But it didn't. It blew up, and then all of a sudden their stories were wanted by other people. And many of them actually refused to talk later on. Like they said their piece. They didn't want to talk about it ever again. The children, especially, who were the main ones talking, were very traumatized by the threats that were given to them. That, you know, these strained military men coming in and saying, we're going to kill you if you say anything. It affected them for the rest of their life. Like, yeah. These people were traumatized.
It would.
And this was also not long after the war. And this had been a town that was very big in the war effort. Like, they did a lot in terms of saving metal, recycling, you name it. They believed their government. They had full faith in the government. So the government was telling them, don't speak. They didn't speak. So it wasn't for 30, 40 years before some of them started to talk.
When they start losing faith in government.
And then I guess also as they were getting older and they realized they weren't as vulnerable as they were when they were 10 years old.
Yeah.
And maybe they could do something and the world had changed. And that maybe...
The internet was born.
Well, for a little bit later, yes. There's also been a few military people who were stationed at Roswell Air Force Base who have come forward to talk about it. A big one, Walter Haut, has spoken at length about his experience. He said he actually saw the bodies in Hangar 84.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it's very interesting, though, because there are two crash sites. So the one crash site that apparently had the bodies and the main wreckage, the other one was just the debris. So that's what I found very interesting, was the two different sites and how, though it's often treated as just one, because I hadn't realized there were two different sites. And here I thought I'd known a lot about Roswell.
Yeah, me too.
But no, there were two different sites. And at first, when I started reading about the two different sites, I'm like, wait a minute, what did I miss? Am I wrong? Is this false? And I really had to look into it. A number of people have reported, like I said, seeing the bodies. Another was Sergeant Brown, who was involved in the cleanup. He reported seeing a tarp that he was told not to look under, which, of course, he was going to look under.
Yeah, don't look under there. He saw
two alien bodies underneath the tarp. And that's the interesting thing, is a lot of these people, for all we know, and from what's been said, they have never contacted each other or talked with each other about this. But they all say the same thing. There were two bodies, two dead bodies and one living one.
Yeah.
And that it was taken to Hangar 84. And from there, well, the story goes like it went to Area 51 is what a lot of the stories go.
Actually, that one's got quite a story behind it. I hope to get into that later, too. Yeah. It's got a name and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to go too deep.
Exactly. That was our thought, was that we don't get too much into that. But that is the idea, that after Hangar 84, they went to Area 51 and what happened after that. So did the Army keep this alien for years and research it?
Apparently,
what happened?
He was able to live on base and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
but I believe...
He eventually did die, but...
I don't think... None of the... So of the witnesses who have come forward, none of them have gained anything. Like, they haven't benefited financially from it. They haven't written books or accounts or anything. They haven't gained money from it that way. Maybe some might have gotten a little bit, some in the odd places. I'm sure maybe someone did something. Yeah. But the majority of them, no, they've never gained. Jesse Marcel Jr. Died a few years ago. And apparently on his deathbed, his daughter says he still claimed to the very end what he saw.
Oh,
he still
well,
backed it
go.
Up till the very end. At least I think that was what I read, that it was Jesse Marcel Jr. It might have been Jesse Marcel Sr. So if I got that wrong, please forgive me.
Yeah. We can't be 100%. Besides that, we're supposed to be more opinionated anyways. We just thought we'd fill you in on some of the times and dates, so don't sue.
I just want to say one more thing about the interviews and everything. Like, a lot of them were conflicting as well, because they had a hard time interviewing people because they were competing and conflicting reports, so they didn't really always match up all the time. So that was another thing that happened, apparently. Yeah. Yeah.
So that some of them
it would be different stuff that they were saying.
Okay, yeah. That's all right. So, I mean, who knows? You tend to forget, right? Especially if you
Well, especially after like 40 years or whatever, right?
Well, human memory sucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so, like, human memory is so unreliable.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's like a whole bunch of stuff, you know? So, I mean, I have some hoax that we could talk about if you
want. Is it the Area 51?
Roswell?
Well, what are we doing today?
Well, you see, Roswell spawned a lot of things. Like, even just after it, there were a lot of things that happened that were, there were hoaxes, there were different things.
Yeah, Roswell is the base.
It really was the jumping point for a lot. So, it does make sense to go into some of those.
Okay. So, one is called, like, Majestic 12 hoax. And this was an organization that made fake documents about Roswell. And they were sent out to a lot of government personnel and others as well. So the person that was in charge of it, his name was Bill Moore. And he was the one behind it. And also a group called the Air Force Intelligence Officers. And basically, he confessed a few years later. Like, they... because they were off, they're after him basically, and they were saying, "Are these real or what are they?" Like, he said, "Well, I actually just made them up, but I just wanted to see."
He was the one that was hired to write the cover-up stories for each incident.
So, is that what it was? Was it that the Majestic 12 hoax? Was that like the that they were coming out with cover stories for Roswell, not like the stories? Is that
that's right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the author of those.
Yeah, okay.
Which, that's why Marvel didn't hire him.
Oh. Yeah, he could write those. I mean, seriously.
And then there was another guy named Glenn Dennis, and he was reportedly contacted about how, basically he was a mortician, I guess, and he was, he was saying that he was contacted by the government how to preserve small bodies and stuff like that. And I guess a nurse reached out to him, but he never did say the name of the nurse about how she was a part of the alien autopsy that happened. And apparently that was all a lie, and he just made it all up, basically.
Yeah, you can't see the government reaching out to a random mortician.
Yeah, so, I mean there was a few of them that I found on there, so.
The government claimed, so in 94 and then again in 97, what it claimed was, so it's kind of funny. The government said, yes, when we said it was a weather balloon, we were lying.
Yeah.
But we were lying because we were covering up a top secret confidential project called Project Mogul, which was where they used weather balloon-like items to, as a surveillance program, to gather information on nuclear testing by Russia. So the government doubled down with the fact that, well, it definitely wasn't an alien. We said it was a weather balloon, but we were lying. It was actually a different type of weather balloon, one that would help us spy on the Russians, but we couldn't tell you then. So as of 97, the government still said that this is what they were doing. So it was like, okay, so you lied to us once and you expect that we're going to take another lie
for the rest of it. Yeah,
but right now the official is that the Roswell incident was Project Mogul. What's interesting on that is that they say that the people who collected the debris would not have realized it would have looked like a foreign aircraft to them, because they wouldn't know what the Project Mogul weather balloons look like, except Mercer was an intelligence officer, as were a couple of the other people there, once who had had experience dealing with these type of nuclear detecting balloons. They knew what they looked like. Yet all these men said that what they found in the debris field was nothing like a weather balloon. So it's kind of like, okay, so what's the government doing? Like, it just expects... I went onto the government's webpage where you could get like freedom of access and all that. And there were a whole bunch of documents related to Roswell. All of them were still buckling down on the whole. It was Project Mogul. It was just an altered weather balloon. That was all it was. Everybody dreamt it up, is what the government is still saying. So it's like, if they're ever going to release the truth, you'd think by now they would. It's been like, what, 80 years, basically? Like, yeah, it's been like almost 80 years.
Not if they're sitting on technology, they won't.
So yeah, it's been like 80 years. You'd think by now they'd release the information. But what did they find there that they've used? Like, hell, are our computers, what's in our phones? Is that alien
tech?
Well,
look at how fast our computers went from being bulbs and transistors to the microchip.
Yeah, a computer that took up a whole building.
An entire building.
Yeah.
Is now less powerful than the thing that's in your pocket.
Well, your cell phone has more power than one of the space stations.
Mm-hmm.
It's got more computing power than one of our satellites. Like, it's insane. Like, the Hubble telescope has less computing power than a cell phone from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
But yeah, but that one was expensive.
I was going to say it's in your Cheerios that you eat.
Yeah.
I feed those to my dog. Wait a minute. Does that mean my dog is now being tracked by aliens or something?
Maybe. Well, we're at 45 minutes. Good spot.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, you guys have yourselves a great evening. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel if you're down for video game streams. I usually hang out with Chris over there. Sometimes Will shows up. Depends on what we're playing. And Sarah's got her Monday night live streams over on the fan page. You guys have yourselves a great evening, and we'll see you next week. Good night.